Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. We are eager to offer amazingly competitive prices, plus an additional $1,000 Costco discount on all new Cherry Hill Volvos. When leasing or purchasing a new or certified Cherry Hill Volvo, you become a valued part of our team. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Rich Cioli Show Podcast.
The Trump campaign responds to the explosive New York Times story about a spy on the Trump campaign. And yes, it's true. You and I are both watching one of the craziest times in our life. And I mean that, too, because now colleges are getting upset because too many white students are getting parts in plays, playing white people or something, I think. The outrage at college. I'm not quite sure. Anyway, welcome back to the show. Glad you are here. The Zioli Show on Twitter at Rich Zioli. Yeah, no, it's a college play. Cast members are upset at too many white students getting parts. They're upset at this one particular play at Columbia College. Roles designed for Palestinians and Latinx students were given to whites. They're also miffed that the play's director, who's black, Catherine Slade, a professor of theater at the school, allegedly made racially insensitive remarks and made changes in the play's script, which fostered stereotypes about immigrants. The production of Homeland is about the stories of Latinx and Palestinian immigration to America. In response to the student complaints about the production and Professor Slade personally, the Columbia College News Office said, the Homeland script called for Latinx, Palestinian, and Caucasian characters. All students who auditioned were cast in the production. However, not all of the students who auditioned were given parts because some of them just couldn't act, I guess. As such, non-Palestinian actors were assigned to those roles. Several Latinx students who initially auditioned for the production didn't pursue participation. Nevertheless, theater directing major Amy Gerwood Valdez complained that Professor Slade dismissed concerns about white students getting roles meant for Palestinians, allegedly saying Palestinians are just white people. I remember this time we were at this place in Florida. Let me use a hypothetical story. So imagine if during the Trump campaign, imagine if a guy was running for president and I was down at a place in Florida where they were having conversations about things. And his campaign manager at the time, let's call him Corky, but just use a hypothetical name. So he was on a call with somebody who said they wanted to create blacks for Trump. They wanted to create Latinos for Trump. They wanted to create gays for Trump, Muslims for Trump. The campaign manager at the time said, it's not how we do it. We just don't put people into these different categories. You're voters. It's voters for Trump. We're just not playing that game. And I got off the phone. I said, you know, I'm glad you said that. I get so tired of this nonsense of why people have to be broken down into their specific, like, why I can't just be a person, you know, just can't be an American. But that's part of the game that's played very often to divide us. You know, you're not just a person. You are a category. You're in a category of person. And then even if you are in that category, you're not really in that category. You're not really Jewish, you're white, or you're not really Jewish, you're not really white, you're Palestinian. You see how absurd it gets? It gets very absurd. But Trump doesn't play that game, and I'm glad he doesn't. And you know, when you hear the media talk about white working class voters voted for Donald Trump, it's not because he did stuff like that, but it doesn't hurt that he doesn't make white people the problem. You know what I mean? It doesn't hurt that he doesn't try to say to white people, it's your fault. America's problems are you and how you do things and you and because of you. But other campaigns do that, do it very often. And then it spills out into the college level with nonsense like this. And it goes on and on. But if you realize what's at the heart of that is division. It's to divide people. And I see this so many candidates right now who are trying to run for president and play this game. And trying very hard to play this game. And as you look at places like Pennsylvania with white working class voters and they talk about how they're going to be the battle again, do you see Democrats doing anything to reach out to those voters to not demonize them? Now, there's nothing wrong with bringing people in who are culturally diverse and welcoming them in, and you should, but you welcome them in as people, as human beings, as Americans, as... But you don't You don't have to do them. It's okay. Whites over there, blacks over there, Palestinians over there, Latinos over there, Hungarians over there. That's the game that is played so often in politics. And I hate it. I've always hated it. So I want us to see what we all have in common with each other. I want us to all... My buddy Greg Renoff, who's a terrific guy, he's the reason why I discovered Dr. Thomas Sowell, who is black, by the way, conservative black American, which is why you'll never see him on MSNBC or CNN or any of these other shows. And we were having a conversation one day at the University of Maryland, walking the beautiful campus. And I said to Greg, because there were all these signs, as they are at every college, you know, our diversity is our strength. You know, joy. And I said to Greg, I go, what's your problem with that? Why don't you like that? He said, because I'm so tired of everybody focusing on what makes us different as opposed to what makes us the same, like what unites us, what we all have in common with each other, as opposed to you're different, you're different, you're different, you're different, you're different. But what's at the heart of that? You're different, you're different, you're different. Victimization, right? You know, if you're different and there's not enough of you and somebody else can be blamed for your plot in life, your lot in life, well then, you know, and here's a handout to help. Here's a handout to help you because you deserve it because somebody else did this to you. That mindset is what fuels that. And then whoever can run along and say, well, I'm going to give this group that, this group that, this group that, that sort of, and then they try to win votes off of that. So it's really a selfish strategy. It's not, they're not really interested in people and whatever obstacles they've overcome in life or any of those things. It's just another way to find, to divide and then say, well, they're the problem, so elect me and then I'll solve it for you by giving you some of their money. But the problem is it causes so much division among people, even actors in plays in colleges, you know, who used to be the most, at least we were told they were so tolerant, right? They're going to come for Dr. Seuss next. I'm going to get to that in a minute. But let me share with you the breaking news of the day today, because this is really big breaking news. The FBI sent an investigator posing as an assistant to meet with President Trump's aide in 2016, George Papadopoulos. So imagine the situation, right? Papadopoulos is over there in London. And he gets a text from this woman who wants to have drinks with him and hang out and everything else, right? Turns out she is a government informant sent on behalf of the FBI, maybe the CIA as well. And she's there to get information to give back to the government. That is what's happened here today. That is this explosive New York Times story that came out. Now, the Trump campaign put out a statement today saying the Trump campaign... There is a word for this in the English language, spying. Democrats and their media friends have expressed horror at that term, but there is no other way to describe it. The FBI spied on the Trump campaign in 2016. For 2 years, Democrats and their allies in the media have lied to the American people about the Russia collusion hoax, when all along, the real scandal was the Obama administration using the Justice Department to spy on a political adversary's campaign. As President Trump has said, it is time to investigate the investigators. Well, now we're learning that it's not just the FBI who was investigating, but also the CIA as well. And I think the CIA is at the heart of all of this because the CIA, John Brennan, who hates Trump and has called him treasonous and everything else, it was John Brennan who was the one who pushed the dossier, the Christopher Steele dossier, in the first place. So as this explosive New York Times story comes out today, you have to understand how many people in Washington are getting scared to death that they're going to be outed next, too. The conversation, this is from the story today, conversation at a London bar in September 2016 took a strange turn when the woman sitting across from George Papadopoulos, a Trump campaign advisor, asked a direct question, was the Trump campaign working with Russia? The woman had set up the meeting to discuss foreign policy issues, but she was actually a government investigator posing as a research assistant. The FBI sent her to London as part of the counterintelligence inquiry opened that summer to better understand the Trump campaign's links to Russia. Her name, Azra Turk. She is one previously unreported detail of an operation that has become a political flashpoint. The decision to use Ms. Turk in the operation aimed at a presidential campaign shows the level of alarm inside the FBI during a frantic period when the Bureau was trying to determine the scope of Russia's attempts to disrupt the 2016 election. It could also give ammunition to Mr. Trump and his allies for their spying claims. Now, let me rewrite that for you from the New York Times. The decision to use Ms. Turk in the operation aimed at a presidential campaign official shows how the FBI was using Russia as an excuse to spy on the Trump campaign. Ms. Turk went to London to help oversee the politically sensitive operation, working alongside a longtime informant, Cambridge professor Stephen A. Halper. The move was a sign that the Bureau wanted in place a trained investigator for a layer of oversight, as well as someone who could gather information for or serve as a credible witness in any potential prosecution that emerged from the case. Now, earlier the point was made by George Papadopoulos that he thinks that she was CIA. You know what I think? I think she was both. The CIA and the FBI, they operate joint task force. Yeah. They operate these joint things all the time. And they do this usually to stop terrorists, you know. But this was done deliberately together, jointly, probably with the NSA as well, probably with the DIA as well, probably other, you know, three-letter worded government agencies to spy on the Trump campaign. So the fact that Ms. Turk probably was a CIA consultant or something like that, and then the FBI used her, is even growing evidence of the fact that the FBI and the CIA were in on this together. They were in on this together. Now, this isn't a kooky story from InfoWars. This isn't Breitbart. This isn't some Daily Caller piece that, you know, someone... This is the New York Times. The gray lady. The one who's always right. The paper of record reporting this. Now, what do you call it when the government sends somebody in, but they say to that person, you're going to lie about your identity, get information from them, and give it back to us? We've talked a lot about James Bond today, but that's exactly what James Bond did. That and kill people. It's called spying. It's espionage. That's what happened. And all this is going to hopefully come out as the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, leads an investigation into the investigators. The reason why they want Bill Barr gone as the Attorney General is because Bill Barr is the one who's allowing this investigation to go forward and giving the Inspector General everything he needs. Everything he needs. And you know, Mr. Barr yesterday had to defend his use of the word spying from idiots on the Senate panel who kept saying, well, why'd you say spying? Was that a rash moment you said that? You wish you didn't say that? You feel bad about saying that? You want to take it back? What do you call it? What do you call this if not spying is my question. What else do you call this? Now, the woman would email Papadopoulos and want to hang out with him and have a drink and then text him and say what a great time she had with him. What a great time. While in London in 2016, Ms. Turk exchanged emails with Mr. Papadopoulos saying meeting him had been the highlight of my trip. I'm excited about what the future holds for us. Weeks before Mr. Papadopoulos met with Ms. Turk and Mr. Halper, the FBI had opened its investigation into the Russia effort, based largely on information that Mr. Papadopoulos had relayed to an Australian diplomat about a Russian offer to help the Trump campaign. Now, let me ask you this question. I seriously want to ask this question to my friends who are Democrats. I want to ask you this question, all right? How do you not have a problem with this? Given the fact that Mueller's report showed no collusion, how do you not have a problem with the fact that the FBI, the CIA, sent an undercover informant to meet with a campaign aide on a presidential campaign of the president, the Republican nominee for president? I guess at that point, the preeminent, likely nominee for president. How do you not have a problem with that they sent in somebody to spy on that campaign? Especially now knowing that there was no collusion. How does that not bother you? How does it not bother you that our government would go to those kind of steps to get information that they could then use politically? Last year, Bill Priestap, then the Bureau's top counterintelligence agent who was deeply involved in the Russia inquiry, told Congress during a closed-door hearing that there was no FBI conspiracy against Mr. Trump or his campaign. But the London operation yielded no fruitful information. But FBI officials have called the Bureau's activities in the months before the election both legal and carefully considered under extraordinary circumstances. All right, let's go with that for a second. Ask yourself this question. Now, you are signing off on putting an informant into a presidential campaign, right? To spy on a campaign aide. To then go back to the government, give information. This is a well-coordinated effort, you say, and legal. FBI, CIA working jointly in this. They're checking boxes. Justice Department is involved. The Attorney General knows about it. The CIA director knows about it. Don't you think the president knows about it too? Don't you think the way that Washington works, where everybody has to get a get out of jail free card, cover your you know what? Don't you think somebody makes it a point to make sure that President Obama knows and knew what was happening? This goes all the way up to the Oval Office. This goes all the way up to the President of the United States, the previous President of the United States, who had to know his DOJ, his FBI, and his CIA were in fact authorizing the use of a special investigator posing as an assistant to spy on the Trump campaign in London. Now, if you think that Obama didn't know, if you think somebody didn't let him know, if you think somebody in Washington got to the level they've gotten to without knowing how to cover their you-know-what, then you, my friend, are the most gullible person I've talked to all day. All righty! The spying. 855-839-1210. See, Brian says on Twitter, at the Vampiric One, Rich, the insurance policy... I should get paid for the use of that Twitter handle, Brian. At the Vampiric One. We need to start like copywriting these things, I think, or something, right?
I know.
Brian, it's okay, because I like you, but otherwise...
I know, but it's like one of the... Probably Mama Zioli think, you know, you've been making these terms up since you were a kid.
Yeah.
And she, you know, your parents actually told me one time they wish they had, like, coined these phrases that you've made up over the years.
I know. I did trademark Zioli Army, so that's good. I had to do that. So now we legally own it, which is good. Brian says, Rich, the insurance policy wasn't the investigation. It was the spy network they set up against Trump. Well, yeah, but that's the purposes of the investigation to then, if he wins, derail his presidency. The two worked hand in hand. Let's see. We have some calls here. 855-839-1210. By the way, Dawn, Maine is the first state to ban single-use plastic foam containers. Maine. Yes, Maine. Single-use food and drink containers made of polystyrene foam. I know you love this, so go ahead. Give me your take on polystyrene and how terrible it is.
It's terrible, and it ends up in the oceans, and it's bad stuff. And so just use other products, reusable products or paper products.
Paper. To get your hot food to go in a paper product.
That's what they did back in the day. They did wax paper. Now they have all kinds
wax
of
paper.
Different...
Wax paper.
No, they have all different kind of paper they're inventing. I'm telling you.
They're inventing new paper?
Yes.
Is it all paper made out of trees?
I was invited to like a mom workshop. I can't go, but like a mom workshop of like introducing all these products.
Oh, wait a second. Please go. You have to go. When is it? When is this?
I can't go.
Can I go? When is it? We got to go
I'll
and film this.
Email.
Please. Is it like, was it some mom's house?
Yeah. You know it's going to be like a fortune for this stuff. My husband's like, you are not going.
Oh, this will be great.
We're not spending $50 on new, you know, whatever.
All these hot moms sitting around selling these things, right?
Nothing better to do.
Yeah, they're sitting around going, now for $50, you can buy this bib. Turtles can't eat it. It's made with organic.
That's right.
Turtle free. No turtles were harmed in the making of this.
Kill the animals.
What other nonsense are they selling at this party?
Hot yoga moms, so they have amazing bodies. They're gorgeous. And
Rich and
we should definitely go to this party.
Rich and I are in.
Hot yoga mom selling crazy things. Yeah, so what, give an example of some of the products now.
Well, apparently there's all this, you know, like how you have Glad wrap or baggies or stuff. But this stuff is like paper, but it's a special kind of paper that molds and that keeps stuff, you know, preserved, but it's actually paper.
Ah.
Or it's made from recycled goods that don't cause cancer, like BPA free and all that.
Our paper, we have cards. You get five for $500. Aren't yoga pants made out of petroleum or something like that?
I'm sure these ladies wear something yoga pants out of
my organic
recycled
rubber yoga pants.
And they're all like see-through yoga pants. Should you tell a person? Like, do they know they're see-through?
Yes.
Okay. So you can see like the lace thong.
Yeah.
You shouldn't, but I can't tell.
You can't tell.
No.
No, you said you can't let them know.
Yeah, should I
no, they know.
Did you know? Okay, they know.
No, they know. Right. I mean, they're wearing it for a reason, right?
Okay. Of course. I don't even think you can really wear underwear underneath them, but you know.
Do you, Greg, when you do yoga at night with Stephanie, do you wear...
I don't wear yoga pants. I wear sweatpants.
Okay. Very good. Men should never wear yoga pants. One of the rules I have, Dawn, if I could amend the Constitution, Convention of States, I would add men are not allowed to wear yoga pants under any circumstances. Or bike shorts, but I ban those too.
They're very comfortable, though. Yoga pants are comfortable.
Guys should not be wearing those.
By the way, one day I'm going to show you two how flexible I've become from doing yoga every
please.
Day.
If
you do that, it'll be the last day on your show. I swear to God.
Please.
You start flexing.
Is that all I have to do?
That's all you got to do.
Okay,
you
cool.
start doing the lotus pose in there. You're out, Stocker.
Right,
you hear that? He starts doing yoga, Dawn. That's it.
I want to see it.
Oh, please.
Everybody wants to see it. Could he do it for the, like, are we going to... tape something at the Down and Derby Festival.
It was a joke.
I'll tell you what.
It was? Oh, I thought he was
Dawn
serious. It's like, good for you.
Well, no,
Greg is being sarcastic. I think Stocker's going to start doing yoga. Come on.
I'm glad with Stephanie. You know, like
yeah,
a couple's.
At home with his wife, where it should be done, but not here.
Yeah. Yoga just helps. Well, never mind.
Anyway,
it's good for you.
Something very good for you. So, 855-839-1210. I don't know. We're just running on a tangent here. That seems to happen in this program. Let's see. Erin is in New Jersey. Erin, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
I got a question for you. I just heard you say that you wanted your Democratic friends to call in and, you know, weigh in on the situation about having Spygate or whatever it is. I'm not a Democrat. I am an independent. I don't affiliate to any one political party, but I do try and follow along and I do try and get as much information as I can. I listen to all the different radio stations. I watch all the different, you know, television. I read all different types of media. I even watch world news. The question I have is, what is the difference between what happened here with Papadopoulos and someone going undercover in a drug ring, or someone trying to get information out of, you know, any other crime that has been committed? It was given that the Russians had affected our election, were infiltrating our election, and the government was trying to find out information. It was passed along that someone from the Trump campaign was having communications with Russians. So what is the problem?
What were they looking for?
To find out if that's the truth. Find out if there was.
Find out if what's the truth.
Find out if there was any truth to finding out if there was any collusion or any kind of information being passed back and forth between the Trump campaign and Russians.
And was there any truth to that?
That's not the point.
No. Let's.
You're talking about what happened when it happened.
No, I'm asking you the outcome. I'm asking you the outcome.
When it happened.
Okay.
When it happened.
I understand your point. I understand your point. You made your point. Now I'm asking you, was there any collusion? Did the outcome of the investigation yield any collusion?
Per se, nothing concrete. Now,
no, the Mueller report showed... Hang on.
You just asked me a question.
We need to agree on something.
I understand that. But
I know you're an independent, so all the things you read, you know that they've said there's no collusion, right? That was the Mueller report finding.
You're asking me a question... And I'm going to give you my interpretation.
I don't want your interpretation. I want Mueller's conclusion. There was no collusion. Now, back up to the investigation.
Go ahead.
So then what was the evidence that they had to launch this investigation to spy on an American citizen? And who, by the way, they never charged with the crime of collusion or anything like that. What was the evidence that the government had to then involve the CIA and the FBI and to get warrants to spy on this man?
That's the other thing, too. We'll get to that second point. My other thing is, again, it, just like any other crime...
What was the evidence?
Let me make my point. See, this is the problem. Anytime you do try and have an adult conversation with someone whose views are different than yours, you guys trying to spin, where you try to turn...
I'm just asking... Look, it's a drug bust. Hang on. Let's go back.
No, go back.
Greg, how do I... I'm going to put you on hold. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put you on hold for a second because you... Okay. You make the point about a drug investigation, right? So the police just don't get a warrant to spy on people if they think there's drugs. They have to have evidence of something, right? So there's going to be evidence. And usually if they're going after drug dealers and they find out they're not dealing drugs, they drop the investigation. They walk away. If at the end of that spying, they find that the person's not a drug dealer, they walk away. But usually there has to be evidence. Now, what was the evidence that the government had? Okay, Erin, since you're an independent, what was the evidence the government had to then get warrants to listen in on George Papadopoulos and other people?
So what everyone is supposed to believe is that not only was the FBI, the CIA, all of the judges that issued the warrants, all of them, every single person involved in our intelligence community are all on the against Trump's plan.
What was the evidence?
I'm asking you a question. I don't know the evidence.
Right.
I don't know the evidence.
Well, but there was no evidence. That's the point. That's the point. If I get it, all right. I'm going to put you. I'm going to put you on hold again.
No.
If I get a warrant to then spy on somebody because the evidence is that we believe they're dealing drugs. Drugs are the evidence. You made the point about a drug dealer, drug ring. So I'm trying to just stay on your turf here. What was the evidence that they had? Now that the Mueller report's come out and all of this has come to light, what was the evidence? Go ahead.
Until they open up the FISA warrants and all of those investigations that went on, and any of the documentation that went towards the FISA warrant application, that is where your evidence is. You're going to let me talk to? Because that's the point. If you want to have a conversation, you have to have two people that have a conversation.
But you're not correct. You're making a factually incorrect point. I'll put you on hold again. I'll tell you. The evidence they used to get the FISA warrant was based on the Christopher Steele dossier. Okay? All right, so they used the Christopher Steele dossier as a basis to get the FISA warrant. That's why they brought. That's why they brought the stories of the FISA of the dossier being in the press. So that was the basis for the FISA warrant.
So all of the judges issued FISA warrants on factual follow you along. So all the judges that issued FISA warrants were all on misrepresentation and not factual data. What? I don't understand.
The FBI went to the judges and said, we have this dossier that alleges these things. They leave out the fact that the dossier is politically motivated, the dossier is politically paid for, the dossier is unverified, and the FISA court approves warrants about 99% of the time. So
that's
why wouldn't
true.
That is 100% true.
Data. That is not factual data.
Listen,
it's very difficult to get a FISA warrant.
Very difficult to get a FISA warrant, really. You know absolutely nothing about what you're talking about right now. FISA warrants are approved almost 99% of the time.
Really? And where is the actual data?
Okay. Go Google it. Thanks for the call, Aaron. Appreciate it. Listen, if you want to try to give me facts, I'm cool with it. But the one thing I can't do is play a game with somebody who's obviously very, very political and clearly has an agenda and doesn't want to learn anything. I have been against the FISA court. I have been calling for the FISA court to be reformed. I urge the president not to renew the FISA court act. And part of the reason for that is the fact that on this show, probably 1,000 times, is that FISA warrants are approved 99% of the time.
Can I just add to this? Because I Google it.
Go ahead.
Because I always fact check, as you know me. Over a 33-year period, this is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, FISA. 33-year period, the court granted 33,942 warrants with only 12 denials, a rejection rate of 0.03%. So that, I just Googled it.
Dawn, it's very tough to get a FISA warrant, Dawn.
Well, some people don't know.
Dawn, it's very tough to get a FISA warrant, Dawn.
Most people have never heard of the FISA court until this whole case. I would remind you of what Chris Christie said, though, as far as the Russian side of things. He said he hopes Trump and this administration takes what they learned about the Russians and what they were trying to do and use that as a blueprint before the next election. So that's a positive.
Always look on the bright side.
I know.
What was that point? What was it? The rejection rate? Oh, point?
It says 0.03%.
Mm-hmm. All right. So again, Aaron, I appreciate the call. I know you're not an independent, and I know that you're, because you, obviously, clearly, you're trying to challenge me on everything. You tried to pretend like you're asking me questions, but really, you're just trying to prove a point, which is fine. If you want to prove a point, call up and be honest and say, I want to debate you on this. Don't call up and tell me that you want to try to ask me a question because you want to learn, and then debate me. Just tell Joe you want to debate. I'll debate you. In fact, I'd rather do that. Yes, Greg.
No, I would just like to say that, Rich, I would like to correct you. You are incorrect. They are only approved 99.97% of the time.
I'm sorry. I misspoke. 99.97% of the time.
Yes.
Okay, that's factually incorrect. I was factually incorrect. I said 99% of the time. Dawn, I was factually incorrect. It was 99.97% of the time.
This is from the conservative bastion site, Stanford Law Review.
See that? See that?
Stanford Law Review, I think, is right up there with Drudge and Breitbart.
So it's very difficult to get. Do you know what those kind of odds, 99.97%? That's impossible, Dawn. It's impossible.
But look at the good out of this. I mean, my kids know what the FISA court is, okay? Like,
just
the American
honest,
public
Yoli.
Is
Thank you, Greg.
Yeah,
thank you.
Woke.
All right. No, yes, we're all
stuff.
Woke. We're very, very woke, Dawn. Thank you. No, I wanted to talk to Aaron. I did, but Aaron had an agenda. So, Joe, this is a teachable moment for you. Erin had an agenda. She wanted to try to prove me wrong, prove that I didn't know what I was talking about. She wanted to debate me. You got to come at me. If you want to take on this brain, you have to know your stuff. You can't just play this game. Yes.
Well, what if Joe had said to her, it sounds like you want to challenge him. Go ahead. You're a smart person.
See, I blame Joe for this, not Erin. Erin, it's not your fault. It's Joe's fault.
Well, you want me to give him the Jeopardy test?
Yeah, Joe. Is it so hard for you to screen a call, Joe? Is that so much to ask,
Joe? No, just coach a little, Joe, and just say, look, he loves to debate, so why don't you just debate?
Yeah.
Like that.
Joe, listen, you've screened 99.97% of the calls wrong today. Wrong.
I'm trying to protect my main man, Rich.
There you go, buddy. I like that.
Rich is a master at that.
All right, so I apologize for being factually incorrect about the FISA court.
Yeah.
It won't ever happen again. I told you, Greg, I'm not often wrong. Sometimes I'm wrong.
Well, this time you're wrong. According to the Stanford Law Review, 99.97% of the time.
I said 99. Okay. See that? I left out the 0.7.
Yeah.
0.7.
9.7.
You know what I'm going to do now to punish myself? I'm going to move to the morning show to punish myself.
No.
And to punish you, both of you, too. All of you.
No. My kids are tweeting. They're very excited at the thought of that.
It's a punishment. I'm going to punish the entire audience now.
Let's do something just for your kids. Thank you.
It's wonderful. For the children. Yes,
I got to bring the cops in here. The poor Philly cops are waiting outside. They're going to wind up arresting us if we don't move this along. Listen, if you are... very good. All right, welcome back. This is now the most favorite thing we do here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. We bring in some of our great friends from the Philadelphia FOP Lodge 5, and we say hello, and we recognize a brave Philadelphia police officer for their service to our city and keeping us safe. First of all, let me begin by saying thank you for listening. Welcome back to the show. John Hoyt is here, of course. Lieutenant John Hoyt, my buddy. Good to see you.
Great to be seen. Great to see you. Always a pleasure.
Is Steve Weiler coming? Should I leave that chair open for Steve, you think?
I'm sorry, who?
I believe Steve Weiler.
I've heard of him. I haven't seen him, but yeah.
Of course, I'm making a comment because I got a text from Steve Weiler yesterday who said he was going to be here, but I don't know where he is, John. So I guess you'll have to run the show on behalf of the entire FOP Lodge 5 today.
Nothing new. Happy to do it.
Now, this guy that you have over here, he looks very familiar, but I'm going to get to him in just a second. The FOP Survivors Fund is why we're here. We want to raise money for that. It's an incredible fund that the lodge has put together. I had the pleasure last week of being at the FOP for the amazing event you guys did with Maureen Faulkner and some other people who are victims of crime as well. So, John, if you could, give us a little overview of the FOP Survivors Fund.
So the Survivors Fund, again, thank you and thank 1210 for always having us on and supporting us. And we just can't thank you enough. For those who don't know, the Survivors Fund was created as a way for the FOP to ensure financially we can always take care of any officers' families that were killed or catastrophically wounded in the line of duty. We talk about it's always in the news when it first happens, but as time goes on, unfortunately, the families can sometimes fade away in the memories of the public. But we have this fund to ensure that we never forget about them and that anything they need, no matter how long it's been, we can take care of all the little things you don't think about until you're on your own. And in fact, we just did a big luncheon for them for over 400, I believe, family members of fallen officers over decades and decades just yesterday at V Catering. They do a beautiful job. Food was incredible. And that's just one of the many things we do with the Survivors Fund. And of course, our big fundraiser is coming up May 18th at the FOP, Saturday at 3 p.m. It's our survivors benefit. It's just one big party. It's a lot of fun. Open to the public. Everyone's more than welcome to come. There's a lot of games. And this year we have Jameson playing. So there's a lot of Jameson fans out there, I'm sure. So they're going to be there this year. So everyone's welcome. Good. It's a great event.
And by the way, the FOP is a really fun place. The lodge is beautiful and big and just a great place to go to hang out. So it's always a fun. That's where it's going to be, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Good. Yeah. Yep. And if they want more information on that, John, how can they get it?
It'll all be on our website. It's on our website, FOP5.org. And I think we also have a billboard on 95 for survivors. So
good.
It's a big event. It's going to be fun.
And we'll make sure we put it on our Facebook page and we'll tweet it out as well, of course. So the man that you brought today for us to recognize, you're just such a spitting image of your brother. It's amazing to me. It really is amazing. I'd like to welcome to the studio Lieutenant Dan Brooks. Born and raised in the great neighborhood of Lawncrest, lower northeast Philly. Lieutenant, welcome to the studio.
Arguably the greatest neighborhood in the city.
Do you want to make that argument? Go ahead, yeah. Make it.
Lawncrest is a fantastic place to live, grow up, spend your childhood. Great place.
And there you go. Now, Lieutenant Hoyt, why did you decide today to bring in Lieutenant Brooks?
Well, Lieutenant Brooks and I have a long history together. We first started working together as detectives out in West Philadelphia. How long? 10, 12 years ago?
About 12 years.
Mm-hmm. And then one night after a solemn occasion, after a funeral, we had a few too many and committed to becoming sergeants. We said, that's enough. We had great jobs as detectives. Worked a lot, but did very well. So then we took the sergeant's test like we promised each other, and unfortunately we both passed, and we looked at each other and said, oh no, we're going to be sergeants.
What do we do now?
We were scattered 100 miles apart from each other in different ends of the city.
Yeah, and then we were back in uniform on the street, and then we made lieutenant together, and we're in neighboring districts as lieutenants, same job, so we worked together a lot again as lieutenants, and we're pretty successful, I think.
And of course, the Brooks family, famous in Philadelphia, very well known by a lot of people in this city. Your father, Philadelphia firefighter, Navy veteran, and originally you said you wanted to be a fireman, is that right?
I did, back in high school. Well, you know, growing up, my father was he joined the fire department after leaving service in the Navy. He's originally from California in this little town called Willits. While he was in the Navy, he relocated to Philadelphia, and he became a fireman out here. He retired, got to be almost 20 years ago. When he left the job, he was one of the highest decorated firemen in the city's history. So naturally, I gravitated towards that. I really wanted to be it. And towards the end of high school, the city was actively recruiting police officers and firefighters. They came to Colonel Dougherty High School, where I attended. There was a big hiring push at the time. I applied for both, obviously, with the hope of joining the fire department. I had a real strong interest in becoming a paramedic there. Philadelphia Police Department called first, and it was the best decision I ever made.
Oh, there you go. See that? That's a beautiful thing right there. You have three children.
Yes, sir.
And I got to mention your brother, Joe, because Joe Brooks is one of my favorite people. I think the world of him. We've done a lot of work together, of course, with the Liberty USO. Joe's a terrific guy. And, man, you look just like him. You walked in, I went, oh, Joe's, oh, it's Dan's here. Okay.
He's so, my older brother.
He's your, you keep mentioning that. You do keep mentioning that, you know. And everywhere I go, people know you, and they know your brother, and they know the Brooks family. So you mentioned that your girlfriend's daughter is a freshman at St. Basil's Academy, and her mother is a detective.
Yeah, she's in Special Victims Unit, assigned to human trafficking. She has a daughter in St. Basil's Academy. It's out in Montgomery County. She's finishing up her freshman year.
I can't say Basil. It's just the Italian in me. I mean, you Irish guys can pull it off. I just, you know. So she deals with human trafficking. That's
amazing. Yes, she does, sir. It's a difficult job. She enjoys it. She's very good at it. She was a detective with John and I prior to this out in West Philly.
Wow. Good stuff. Again, I want to remind you, I'm in here with Lieutenant John Hoyt from the Philadelphia FOP Lodge 5. Today, we're recognizing Lieutenant Dan Brooks. It's my favorite thing we do here on Talk Radio 1210 is we salute the shield and say thank you for the great work they do and raise money for the FOP Survivors Fund, which goes directly to the families at their worst moments when they need it most, and also after those moments when they still need the help and the support. The big fundraiser is coming up May 18th. But you can always give money to the FOP Survivors Fund. Anyone can at any time make a contribution. They're always putting the money to good use, right?
Absolutely. It's tax deductible. You can send your money to Harrisburg and Washington, or you can send it to us, and we're going to make sure we spend every cent of every dollar you send goes right to survivors. It's just part of what we already do at the FOP, so there's no extra management costs in that. So every dollar, every cent goes to the survivors.
We're going to take a quick break for news, but when I come back, Dan, I want to ask you some of the things that you've had to see in your career as a police officer in the city and a lieutenant in the city, and what advice you'd give for younger officers just starting on the job, all right?
Yes, sir.
Beautiful. It's my favorite thing we do here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. We salute the shield, FOP Lodge 5, Philadelphia, and it's great to be here with you tonight. Two lieutenants in the room, which is great because I got a soft spot for lieutenants because my dad retired as a lieutenant. So we have with us John Hoyt, my buddy, the FOP Lodge 5. John, thanks for coming by. Thanks for all the great work you've done with this this campaign of ours. So
listen, it's, you know, it's my pleasure. And again, the Zeoli Army, just, I can't thank you guys enough out there, and 1210 and you. Whatever we can do for you, please let us know, because we appreciate all the support.
Now, listen, people are happy to do it. I mean, the Zeoli Army loves the support of our law enforcement, that's for sure. And, of course, we have with us today Lieutenant Dan Brooks, who's in studio with us.
Pleasure to be here, sir.
It's great to meet you, and great to see you. And, you know, I like I said, I know your brother. I think the world of him. Joe Brooks is a great guy. But your son's also on the job, which is amazing.
Yes, he is. He's celebrating 1 year with the Philadelphia Police Department, and he's currently working in the district that I was originally assigned to when I got out of the academy. So it's a
which district is
really
that?
Proud moment for me. 25th District in Kensington, Fairhill section of the city.
A boring district, right? Not much goes on there?
It's a challenge, but he enjoys it very much, and he speaks highly of it.
So your dad was a firefighter.
Yes, sir.
You're on the job, your son's on the job, and your girlfriend is also on the job. That's pretty amazing.
Yes. My cousin is also a member of the Elite Highway Patrol Unit as we speak. And he also is very fond of this.
Wow, that's great. I mean, you gotta love that. Absolutely, you do. What I think is really fun is that you and Hoyt, together, you guys had this pledge to both get promoted, and then it happened. So it kept going.
Yeah, to our surprise.
By the way, you're promoted in January 2014. So
yes,
not too far. And now you're in East Falls.
Yes, I'm in Northwest Detectives. It covers four districts: the 5th District, Manioc, Roxborough, mm-hmm. 39th East Falls section, 14th Germantown, Mount Airy, and the 35th District, Alney, East Oak Lane, West Oak Lane.
And how do you like that part of the job, being the detective part of it?
I love it. I love the entire investigative aspect of law enforcement. It's fascinating. Every day it's something new. It's spontaneous. Mm-hmm. The contrast of the structure of a job in law enforcement with the continued spontaneity of things as they occur. I oversee a great group of men and women. They handle all the non-fatal shootings in the confines of the division that we work. They also work robberies involving persons who conduct pattern crimes, as well as burglaries. And we have a domestic unit, mm-hmm. And a long-term missing person team that covers the division we work in. They're a great group of people. They work tirelessly and often unthanked.
And what's the advice you'd give to new officers starting out?
My advice to the men and women joining this job or new to this job is to enjoy the moment they're in. I think it's a cultural thing going on right now that everybody's concerned with what happens next. I think you should concentrate on being the best patrol officer you can be. Learn as much as you can in the beginning. Remember the moments, live the moments, make friends, get involved in extracurricular police functions like the FOP, mm-hmm. Or whatever other society there is. And definitely move forward with their education and move forward with the advancement within the police department. There's a constant need for new leaders in the police department, and we're excited to have them. And it's a great group of people that have been coming out lately, and a lot of them have transitioned from the military to the police department, and it shows in the character and the way they carry themselves. But besides being safe, I think the best advice I could give them is to live in the moment, learn the job, focus on the task at hand, and be the best they can be at the job they have.
Oh, excellent advice. Well, we salute you, Lieutenant. We thank you very much for your service to the city, Lieutenant Dan Brooks.
Pleasure.
Recognized. What do you say?
That'll work. Sure.
Yeah, all right. We're recognizing you this month on our Salute the Shield. And, of course,
thank you.
Lieutenant John Hoyt from the FOP Lodge 5. And Steve Weiler's chair. We saved that chair for him over there.
Yeah, hey, Steve.
All right, that's our Salute the Shield segment. Again, please support the FOP Lodge 5, their big event, May 18th. John, once again, the website?
FOP5.org.
FOP5.org. Easy to remember. All right, we got to do that thing, Greg, that we do. Let's do it.
All righty. Who won Twitter? I'm going to give it to your pal, Brian Glass. This isn't a funny one, but I think it's very interesting. He says, Rich, the Back to the Future's use of the word chicken is actually a riff on Dennis Hopper antagonizing James Dean in Rebel Without a Cause. I had no idea.
That's a little history.
That's why Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
Twitter.
You won Twitter today. Excellent. Afternoon. Excellent.
Yes.
Dawn, we learned, speaking of chicken, never to wash it.
Don't wash your chicken. Apparently, drug dealers are washing a lot of shrimp, too. They got the shrimp with the cocaine. It's bizarre.
You know, I mean,
it's a strange world we live in.
The drug dogs can't smell the shrimp or the drugs in the shrimp or something. I don't know. We'll try to encounter that for another day, I guess, as well. Of course, now we have Mark Levin, the great one, coming up, and I'm sure he's going to have a lot to say today on, again, the explosive story today in the New York Times that the FBI had a spy on the Trump campaign going out there to meet with George Papadopoulos, her cover being a research assistant, but she was there to spy on the Trump campaign. A major story today in the New York Times. I'm sure Mark Levin will give you the latest on that. My final thought as well, straight ahead.
Rich Cioli, 3-6, Talk Radio 1210, WPHT.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.